Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 147, recorded January 21st, 2013.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello.
So, what's on the menu?
The menu?
Well, not the menu. You know what I mean.
No. We're going to hear from Tony in New York and Tom here in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about our Facebook post.
Oh, the one from this morning.
Yes. The guessing game.
The guessing game. Okay, cool.
Okay, so let's do Tony first. First, he starts off saying, "Thank you for the gift. The surface area song was spirited and uplifting. Hooray for science!" Yes, and I have to say, you're a very loyal fan that you liked the song, Tony.
I think the song itself was cool.
I think you wrote very fun lyrics. We didn't sing it very well because it was late at night. We're like, oh, we need to do this.
And I was losing my voice.
You were losing your voice, and I think it was in the wrong key for me.
Yeah, probably. we'll sing it better sometime.
Yeah,
as
maybe
a separate
so.
Thing that we'll release somehow or something. But I'm glad you liked it. Spirited and uplifting. That's a very positive spin.
I liked your spoof lyrics. I thought they were good.
Yeah, those crumbly noises in the back are our cat. Sorry about that.
He's prowling.
Okay.
It's too cold to go outside and play, so he's got cabin fever. Okay, so Tony goes on to say, "Thanks for talking to me about shrimp last week and for clearing up the acronyms. I've decided to go ahead with obtaining some red cherry shrimp. They're being sold as Supreme Red Cherry Shrimp. They appear very bright, and I can't wait to try them out. They're going to live in a 6.6-gallon nano, along with plenty of java moss and three friendly zebra nerite snails. Should be a safe and happy place to raise the young. Hooray for shrimp!"
Yeah, it does sound like a great setup for them.
Mm-hmm. On another note, this past December, I decided to move my killifish out of their 20-gallon and into the care of a local enthusiast. My plan was to shut down the tank gradually, a few water changes at a time. The whole process was pretty nostalgic for me, since these Fundolo Panchax Marmoratus GS88-1 have been really fantastic and fun fish. Well, anyway, so it was the last day, the day that I was going to finally drain and shut down the tank. I turned on the aquarium light in order to survey the level of debris and plan the operation. What do you know? There, swimming gleefully amongst the java moss and racing along the gravel, I saw no fewer than 15 killifish fry, no greater than 2 millimeters each. It was a New Year's miracle.
Congratulations.
That's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
Unexpected. I was absolutely captivated, and needless to say, I think I will keep the tank going a while longer. As I write this, it is 2 weeks later, and they are swimming side by side with their new Daphnia friends and growing fast. Amazing, amazing. Happy New Year from Tony.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Tony, and we're glad that you had such a New Year surprise.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool. There's nothing like looking into a tank and seeing surprise fry.
I'm sure they'll get very friendly with the Daphnia, too.
Until they get big enough to eat them.
Yeah, the Daphnia might not get very much out of the friendship. That's okay. By the time they realize that they have been betrayed, it will be too late. So.
It will be too late, and they won't be able to realize anything because they'll be in
their digested. And then we have another more recent contact from Tony with a question. He says, "So I was thinking about maybe adding some shrimp to the zebra danio tank. I know that shrimp fare well with certain inoffensive fish like white clouds and maybe neon tetras, but what do you think about zebra danios? A possible match, or are the danios just a little too plucky for this endeavor?"
Well,
I like that you used the word plucky.
And endeavor in the same sentence.
You get points today.
Exactly. Here's something. My inclination would be go with your latter idea there, that they probably will pick on the shrimp a little bit too much. Not to say that you couldn't get the shrimp to survive in there with them, or even breed. You probably will. They probably will breed in there with them. But I think the zebra danios are going to pick at them maybe a little more than white clouds would, or neon tetras. I've kept and bred shrimp with both white clouds and neon tetras. I don't believe I've tried it with zebra danios, but I have kept zebra danios, and they're just, you know, white clouds, for example, you can spawn them in a tank and then have the young grow up in the same tank with the adults, and I've done that several times. So they're relatively inoffensive that way. Zebra danios, on the other hand, are notorious for eating all of their fry and eggs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if... So I just kind of saying, not that it couldn't be done to some extent, but you probably wouldn't have the healthiest shrimp population along with them. You know, you'd probably get some breeding depending on the plant cover and so on, but wouldn't be as ideal.
I guess he didn't say why he wants to add the shrimp, if it's for algae or just for fun, but is there something that you could recommend that would be good in there with the zebra danios? He doesn't say why he was going to put them in, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. It may just be thinking he's got this 6.6 gallon tank and he's going to have shrimp in there, and then they're going to breed like crazy, and he could put some as sort of overflow in there. I don't know, that's possible. Maybe. I don't quite remember the parameters of the zebra danio tank, so maybe we could find that out and then we could think more about
that. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Tony.
Yeah. And good luck with your wee killifish fry and with your new shrimp endeavor.
Indeed. Your plucky shrimp.
Yeah, Mick said it was only a matter of time before we turned you to the shrimp side. He said that on Facebook a while ago, yes. So there you go. And he liked the song, too.
Oh, did he?
So thank you, Mick.
That's good. I'm glad. It's good to know that somebody appreciates it when you make a total fool out of yourself.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay. So we are going to... This is a new contributor, Tom, in Provo.
In Utah.
Which is just a little bit south of us.
Yeah, our southern neighbor, only about an hour away from here.
Yeah. It says, Russ and Kelly, I've enjoyed your podcast for a few months now and would be proud to consider myself an Aquarimaxer. Any plans for t-shirts? I'd buy one.
Well, we do consider you an Aquarimaxer, and
t-shirts?
We actually have some ideas for some t-shirts.
We've been talking about that for a little bit.
Yeah, so we'll see if we can get one. And we know that we have at least one buyer.
Woohoo!
So awesome.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for the effort you consistently put forth. I am particularly impressed by the way you've included the entire family and that you treat the children's contributions with such respect. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
We think our kids are pretty awesome. So.
Yeah, they are. Gotta say that. Mm-hmm. And we're looking forward to this. Their science projects are culminating very soon. And once they have, we will have them on the show again.
We can kind of go over what ended up happening.
Yeah. Some of them had to, you know, start with a different idea several times, but we found some interesting things, so there you go.
Okay, so Tom says, I have kept freshwater aquaria ranging from 10 to 55 gallons at various times over the years, but have mostly flown by the seat of my pants. I am now trying for a more knowledgeable approach. I have several questions that I would like to raise, but will begin by first asking for book recommendations. I would like to get a comprehensive reference book on freshwater aquarium fish, something like Peter Hiscock's Encyclopedia of Aquarium Plants, but focusing on fish rather than plants. What books should be part of a basic library for a serious freshwater aquarist or someone who wants to be one?
That is an excellent question. But I don't know that I'm the best person to answer that. I'll tell you what I use as my comprehensive reference is fishbase.org.
There you go.
So it's not a book. But the reason why I use that is because, not that it's infallible or anything, but it is a good reference, and it's updated more... regularly than most of the books out there.
It just seems like they come up with so much new information every year that it would be outdated so fast.
Yeah, like all of the LCATs, for example. Mm-hmm. The catfish with the L numbers. There's so many species they can't describe them, you know, fast enough.
Wow.
So you get a book from 5 years ago and there are going to be so many catfish that hadn't even been discovered yet. Things like that. So, and then they're always renaming things.
Well, that's because taxonomists need some job security. Well, this is my beef with taxonomy, and Russ and I have talked about this several times and debated about this. If you describe everything, then you're done, and you're out of a job. And so they have to keep saying, no, I think it should be this, and having arguments about it so that their research companies and their universities will continue to pay them. And really, that's all it is. So that's kind of my cynical view of taxonomy. Not that it's not a useful science, but I think they take themselves a little too seriously.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I got to tell you this. For example, if a taxonomist is studying fish, a certain type of fish, right? And this taxonomist determines that there are five different geographic races of the fish that occur in five different parts of a river system.
Mm-hmm.
legally protecting one of those geographic races is a lot more difficult than protecting an individual species. So if a taxonomist is able to justify and determine that one of those geographic races is a specific species of fish, then it's a lot easier to protect it.
What's the difference between a race and a species in fish?
Okay, that's a huge complex thing that probably don't have time to get into right now, but the basic idea is if they're not different enough to be deemed a species, but there are certain characteristics
like
that render them
a variety of a species.
Yeah, like a naturally occurring variety.
And it's harder to protect a species, or it's harder.
It's easier to protect a distinct species, to get funding for it, and to get legal justification
but
to protect a specific
species.
A race is
part of a species,
right? But a geographic race saying there are certain systematic characteristics in this population of fish that are not the same as this one, and yet we still consider them the same species, then it could be a geographic race.
Okay.
But
it's harder to protect a geographic race
than it is a species.
Than a species. Why?
Basically, the idea behind the laws are, well, that's only one variant of this species, but it's not unique. It's not as unique because we have this other population that's also the same species. So if that little population goes out, these other populations still persist.
It's a different kind.
It is. So from that standpoint, it's better to be a splitter, a taxonomist who's a splitter, in terms of being able to do that, because they're going
to preserve
more species.
So wouldn't they have to be a joiner because they have to preserve the whole species and not the individual?
No, because they have to say this race, this geographic race, it's actually not a geographic race, it's an entire new species in this area, so we need to protect the fish in this area.
But they're the same species. I thought, because, oh my goodness. See, that's not even being a taxonomist. That's being a legal jockeyist.
Well, the taxonomists have to play the game in order to.
I hate playing games. I'm entirely too ungamey to survive in this world. But that's why you liked me when you met me, because I
didn't
play games.
That's true.
You
didn't play games. There you go. And it's also an issue of grant money is easier to get if you're saving a species a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
Because that's that species. Mm-hmm. You don't want to wipe it off the face of the earth. So they have to play that game in order to save the species and for their livelihood too. So okay. But back to the subject at hand, where were we?
Yeah, sorry,
we're at Tom's question about the books.
Random tangent there.
No, that was important too. But the fishbase.org is my main reference. I do happen to collect some fish books,
books. Kind of like antique fish books.
I do.
Or at least older ones, just for nostalgia's sake.
Right. And I do have a couple I just pulled off the shelf a minute ago, because we were going to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Here is The Complete Aquarist Guide to Freshwater Tropical Fishes, written in, this edition was published in 1976.
So
I was just a wee baby at the time, mm-hmm. but there it goes. And this was printed in England, and it's in excellent condition, actually. This is in pretty good condition, and it's got lovely photos of fish of all sorts. The issue is, of course, there have been many species discovered since then, and there are have been many advances in all kinds of
hobby in general,
things of the hobby, all sorts of aspects of the hobby. But lots of other species have been discovered, so this is no longer a comprehensive reference.
Book is probably
in terms
even pre-bio wheel.
Oh yeah, probably. It's ancient. Here's another one that's a little more recent. This is the Eyewitness Handbooks Aquarium Fish, the visual guide to more than 500 marine and freshwater fish varieties. Much more up to date, 1993.
Which is still 20 years old.
Still old, and still missing all sorts of things that have been discovered since then, but still a handy reference. I mean, it's got color photos of fish, it's got range maps, it's got their sizes, and it's got their diet, and a couple of interesting tidbits about them. So this is a great book, great reference, but again, it's outdated. So if I want something really, really current, I just go to FishBase, because it's changing all the time. Mm-hmm. As soon as they discover something, it tends to go up there fairly quickly, so that helps. Not to say that there aren't good books out there.
And get some more recent books, but then keep adding, keep checking online for
additions, yeah.
New info.
Right, and not to say that there aren't several books out there that I wouldn't love to have more recent reference books and so on. If any of you out there have a preferred reference book that you use, why don't you tell us which one you like, and we'll pass that on to Tom. Okay, and thank you, Tom, for joining us, and we're proud to consider you an Aquariumaxer.
And we'll totally let you know about the t-shirts.
Yeah, because we are working on some ideas there.
Yeah.
If anybody has ideas, let us know. We're thinking at least one idea relates to surface area.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, we should get a t-shirt that has, like, 100% more surface area than competing brands of t-shirt. Wouldn't that be
We'd
cool?
We'd have to make it a really bumpy t-shirt.
Yeah, it'd be really fuzzy. It'd be fun. Okay, there you go.
Okay, I think let's take our break now.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nell.
Okay, so earlier today, Russ posted on Facebook that he was changing the goldfish tank, and guess what he found?
And several people replied with varied responses.
Yes, the most varied of one was a wild me. He said,
meaning
a wild Kelly.
But there are a couple of problems with that.
I don't fit in the tank.
Yeah, the tank's only 37 gallons, so she wouldn't fit.
Yeah, it wouldn't work very well.
It was kind of funny, though.
Yeah. Plus, there'd have to be an awful lot of Anubias for me to hide in it.
That's true. Yeah, and okay, that's true.
Okay, moving on. Ryan said a snail. Joel said, I'm going to go with an assassin snail because you do those, and also they seem to survive cold water pretty well. I found one in my putting my water in here to mature it for water changes bucket outside once, which I have to say is a very cool name for a bucket.
And very hyphenated, which
yes,
we
like
appreciate.
The
so. Mm-hmm.
And Matthew says, gold baby.
And?
Which I'm assuming means a baby goldfish.
Right.
Yes.
But I'm going to have to say, we didn't find any of those things in the tank. Actually, what we found was, and here comes the suspenseful part.
Dun dun dun. Sorry, I thought you wanted me to do the music after. And it was
an Amano shrimp.
And how, pray tell, did an Amano shrimp get in our goldfish tank?
Well, that's the funny thing, because we were trying to figure out how long it had been since I had put an Amano shrimp in that tank, and it had been 2.5 years
at least.
Maybe longer. But at least that. And it was in there and it had been doing fine. Hiding in the thickets of Anubias at the bottom, I suppose. And eating, you know, scraps and algae and so on. The algae crew in the tank, to my knowledge, had been only a bristlenose placo and an olive narrow, and they'd been doing quite well. But I didn't know that we had an Amano shrimp on the crew.
No, we thought they had all perished long ago.
Yeah, just because they don't live all that long. I guess they can live several years and but I just didn't expect it to still be in there. It may have been one of the ones that I put in there, like, 5 years ago. Before we even moved here.
And then moved up here?
Yeah. And they came during the move. I'm not sure.
Do they live that long? Amano shrimp?
That's the thing. I don't think they live 5 years. I'm not sure what the longevity record is. But anyway,
two and a half years is not too shabby.
A lot of shrimp only live a year, so. Mm-hmm. So at least 2.5 years, and that's pretty amazing. It would survive in there with goldfish, and that it would, you know, escape my notice for so long.
Oh, it's poor little lonesome. I don't know how social.
Well, who knows?
Are.
Maybe there's like 7 of them in there. It's not like a shrimp that would be reproducing in there. You know, a red cherry shrimp, if I saw one in there, I might suspect that it was a descendant of others.
And why would an Amano shrimp not?
Their reproductive cycle is rather complex. It involves a period of salt water.
Ah, so they wouldn't be doing that in the goldfish tank.
Right, so they wouldn't be able to reproduce successfully in the goldfish tank.
And speaking of shrimp, I have a little note. I took our daughter, Laurelyn, to the aquarium this last week, just her and me, and they had in one of the exhibits a little tank that had a goby and a snapping shrimp in it. And these are the guys that, they're marine, and the shrimp digs out a little tunnel, a little burrow, and kind of keeps a feeler. He doesn't see very well, so he keeps a feeler on the goby, and the goby's out there standing watch. And if anything dangerous swims by, he twitches, and the shrimp feels it, and the shrimp ducks back in the burrow, and then the goby ducks back in the burrow, and they both hide, so they kind of have a roommate relationship.
Yeah, symbiotic mutualism.
That's what I was trying to say. But anyways, I was looking at the shrimp at the aquarium, and I got a pretty good picture of it, because I was thinking, oh, I have to get a picture of this shrimp for Mick, so I can put it up on the page. So we'll try to get that up.
Yeah, yeah. She's got quite a few video clips there and some stills, and we'll try to make a compilation of some kind, mm-hmm. put it up.
We got a kind of a creepy picture of a dwarf came in.
Yeah.
I kind of was looking at it going, ugh.
It's got some interesting exhibits, this aquarium. It's the Living Planet Aquarium.
The Living Planet Aquarium in Sandy,
Utah. It's got an Amazon mm-hmm. area, a large one, and that's where the anaconda is.
Yes, they have an anaconda. And it's just, it's so big. And it's just a young one, too. It's not even remotely as big as it will get. But it's still, it's just, like, it's hard for me to wrap my head around, if you'll excuse the pun.
How big it is. Absolutely massive it is.
Yeah.
They've got a penguin exhibit.
Oh, they have cute penguins.
Gentoos, right?
Yeah, in fact, I was talking to one of the employees there, and he said they have 11 penguins, and out of those, they have 4 mated pairs.
Yeah, that's
which
pretty good.
Pretty good, because that's 8 out of 11.
And are they getting any chicks?
Not yet. They don't have any yet, but they're hoping that they'll get some.
Cool. And you saw sharks. They had a shark tank. You could touch the sharks, right?
Baby sharks. One of them was so funny. It was like a dog. And he was literally sticking his head up out of the water wherever the people were going, pet me, pet me, pet me.
Right, he was saying that literally?
Oh, yes! Absolutely! What are you talking? Well, I meant he was literally sticking his head out of the water. He wasn't literally saying that. At least not out loud, but that is what he was projecting.
Okay, I see.
But he was just, like, totally swimming up to the people and sticking his head out of the water and, woohoo, here I am!
Attempting to solicit attention.
Yeah, it was so funny. I didn't think that sharks could be friendly.
Well, apparently they can.
Apparently this one can.
And you can touch stingrays as well?
Most of the stingrays got too big, so they moved them out of the touch tank. They had a little one who was also kept sticking his head out of the water.
Hmm.
So it was those two. They were like the welcoming committee, and everybody else in the touch tank was like, I'm sitting on the bottom where you can't reach me. Ha, ha, ha. But those two were quite friendly.
Hmm.
And we got to see a feeding of the giant Pacific octopus, who turned bright red because he was so excited to eat. It was interesting because the person giving the presentation was explaining that the octopus recognizes the keepers and he reacts differently when he eats depending on who is feeding him. So I don't know if he has his favorites.
It's interesting. I wonder, did he elaborate on that?
No, he just said he reacts differently depending on who's feeding him.
Okay. It would be interesting to see how the reaction is different depending on the people.
While we were there, we talked to some people about the possibility of setting up an interview with someone from the aquarium. So we'll be working on that, and hopefully we'll be able to do that soon, because that would be really neat.
It would be, especially if we got to do an on-site interview.
Yeah, do like a video interview?
Yeah,
that would be neat.
All right, well.
In the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.